Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, the son of Abu Talib, alayhi salam. In the historical texts, dear friends, we find this very beautiful and interesting report from a man named Wahidi. In this report, he says that Imam Ali, Abbas, the uncle of the Holy Prophet, and Talha, one of the companions of the Holy Prophet and the companions of Imam Ali, were engaged in this kind of self-glorification or in this talk of pride about each other's accomplishments. And so originally the conversation goes that Talha and Abbas, the uncle of the Holy Prophet, the two of them were talking to each other about what made them better or made them more important than the other. It is after the two of these, Talha and Abbas, were speaking to each other that in the end Imam Ali comes and he speaks as well. So Talha, he says, "What a better honor is there for me than having the keys of Allah's house and its opening upon my orders." So Talha here, he was saying that he has the keys of the Kaaba, the house of Allah, and it opens and closes upon his order. So Abbas, the uncle of the Holy Prophet, says, "It is an honor for me that I provide the Hajj pilgrims with the water of Zamzam, which is solely at my disposal." And so the water of Zamzam was under the honor of Abbas, the uncle of the Holy Prophet, to give this water to the Hajj pilgrims. Now the two of these were talking to each other, and then Imam Ali says, "I have no idea of what you are both speaking about, but I started to worship Allah 6 months before any other person." So here Imam Ali alayhi salam is talking about being the first man to accept Islam, and it was only after 6 months of him accepting Islam did any other man accept Islam. And so this is something which is recorded in both the Sunni books and the Shia books, that Imam Ali alayhi salam was the first man. He was exactly the first man to accept Islam at the proclamation of the Holy Prophet. And so here, dear friends, the subtle point in the lesson is that these different honors which a human being has, these aren't as important. The status, the power, the position, this is not what gives value and true honor to a human being. True value, true honor, true status, true position, true greatness comes via belief. It comes via faith. It comes via iman. And so just as Imam Ali alayhi salam says that being a believer, being a worshiper of Allah before the other people is a pride and an honor, thus it should be for us as well. Interestingly, this same conversation that takes place is reflected in the Holy Quran in chapter number 9, verse number 19 through 20. So go ahead and check it out. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafiyya. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, remember, the best out of these pieces of advice of mine are those which tell you to fear Allah, to concentrate and to confine yourself to the performance of those duties which have been made incumbent upon you by Him, and to follow in the footsteps of your ancestors, the Holy Prophet and Imam Ali, and your pious and virtuous relationship. Verily, they always carefully measured their thoughts and deeds, as you must also try to do, and they carefully thought over the subject before saying anything about it or before doing a deed. You should also follow the same. This kind of deliberation made them take from life what was really the best and forsake that which was not made incumbent upon them or which was not the best. If your mind refuses to accept my advice and you persist to try your own experiments like them, then you are at liberty to arrive at your conclusions, but only after thoroughly studying the subject and after acquiring the knowledge necessary for such decisions.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. And I would like to begin with this first question about Amir al-Mu'mineen. And the question about who is Ali is actually a very simple question. What I want to answer tonight is the question of what is Ali. There is a difference between who is Ali and what is Ali? Look at the Quran. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Fussilat, ayat number 42, He says, لَا يَأْتِيهِ الْبَاطِلِ مِنْ بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ وَلَا مِنْ خَلْفِهِ. Quran is a protected book. No falsehood will come to it from the front or the back or any direction. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah An-Nahl, ayat number 82, says, وَنَزَّلْنَا عَلَيْكَ الْكِتَابِ تِبِيَانًا لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ. Quran is tibyan, clarification for everything. Aliyun ma'al Quran wal Quranu ma'al Aliyin. Basically means the way Quran has been protected from falsehood and batil, the person of Ali bin Abi Talib has been protected from every falsehood and batil. Quran is ma'soom and Ali is also ma'soom and protected. Quran is tibyanan li kulli shay. Quran is clarification for everything. And Ali is the source of tibyan for everything. In that ayat, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, tibyanan li kulli shay wa hudan wa rahmatan wa bushra lil muslimin. That Quran is not only a tibyan, it is a guidance and mercy and good news for the Muslims. Ali ibn Abi Talib similarly is huda. He is the guidance, and he is the rahmah, and he is the bushra, and the good news for the mu'mineen.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
The light.
Wally the Walrus has risen to fame with his extensive travels around Europe. Now the giant mammal has added Iceland to his list of trips. Wally has previously visited France, Spain, and the UK. His last known location before Iceland was Ireland. Scientists were not sure at first if they had indeed seen Wally, but Seal Rescue Ireland recognized him from scars on his front flippers. The wandering walrus is 4 years old and weighs about a ton. He has covered a distance of around 5,000 kilometers in his recent trips. Wally is now on his way towards his home in the Arctic. The French zoo has had a very productive year, welcoming multiple new animals into its collection. Two pumas, two jaguars, nine Peruvian squirrel monkeys, and even rarer macaque twins are new additions to Lemmingne Zoo this summer. The animals were bred as part of a program designed to maintain and promote the conservation of endangered species. Once they reach the breeding age, these animals will be transported to other zoos to help boost the population of their species.
Now, a museum in Russia's Kaliningrad has unveiled a special exhibition to the public. It would not be exactly wrong to call the artworks out of trash. All the works exhibited are made of rubbish. The exhibition is showcasing a wide array of objects, including sculptures, musical instruments, robots, and costumes. The project was designed with the aim of raising awareness about recycling. People visiting the exhibition were delighted by the creative use of garbage. Only 7% of waste is recycled in Russia each year, while a vast amount of trash is stored in landfills.
An Egyptian artist is making incredibly tiny statues of famous historical figures and landmarks on pencil tips. 30-year-old Ibrahim Balala is based in the city of Rashid, south of Cairo. He has mastered the art of crafting miniature sculptures. Ibrahim mostly creates statues of Egyptian pharaohs, but Islamic, Greek, and Roman figures also feature in his portfolio. The artist received some criticism when he first ventured on his art, but he persevered and rose to prominence with his minuscule statues. Ibrahim's dream is to open a museum of miniature sculptures someday.
Fourteen lucky penguins have been returned to the seas off the Atlantic coast of Argentina after rehabilitating them from malnutrition and hypothermia. The Magellanic penguins waddled back happily into the chilly waters once they were released. They were distressed, malnourished, and dehydrated when they were found by conservationists in February. There are an estimated 2 to 3 million Magellanic penguins in the world. The cute birds are named after Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan. They are mostly found around Argentina and Chile.
Another groundbreaking archaeological discovery in Peru is now catching attention. 800-year-old human remains south of the capital, Lima, highlight the ancient burial rituals in the South American country. The remains of 8 adults and children buried in a common tomb were found by a group of workers laying gas pipes at the site. They were buried with food, dishes, and musical instruments, including flutes. Archaeologists say that the 8 people lived in the ancient town of Chitka, some 60 kilometers from Lima. They say some of the bodies were buried with the shells on their heads and had bags with cocoa leaves inside them. They say the discovery will shed more light on the pre-Hispanic history of the region. Another 30 human remains had been discovered in Chitka in 2018.
A taxi company in Thailand has turned its vehicles into mini vegetable gardens to help its drivers who are out of work due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The point of this project is so that employees have something to do to reduce stress. To a certain extent, it has helped with reducing our stress, but it isn't really the answer to the situation right now. Even though the drivers and the staff are able to harvest the vegetables for food, it's just part of solving the problem. I think the government should also step in to help us too.
The taxi company is growing vegetables on the roofs and hoods of 300 disused taxis that are parked idly. Prolonged COVID-19 lockdowns have affected the drivers' income negatively so that they are unable to pay the lease of their vehicles. Therefore, working in these gardens has reduced their stress and provided the drivers and their families with food. Amongst the thousands of shops in Tehran's Grand Bazaar lies a tiny tea house with a long history that attracts visitors with its famous treats. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House is the smallest and oldest tea house in the Iranian capital. The 2-meter-wide cafe belongs to 63-year-old Kazim Maputian, who took over the century-old business from his father. He serves a wide range of teas, but his signature is the tea of kindness, a mixture of mint, lemon, and saffron. His tea house is the most famous in Tehran, serving some 200 customers every day. It used to be a tourist attraction before the coronavirus pandemic. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House was enlisted as Iran's intangible cultural heritage in 2016. Farmers working on the border between Venezuela and Colombia have discovered a tusk that is believed to belong to an American mastodon from 16,000 years ago.
We went to the place and the fossil was there, and then we realized it was something very important. We rescued it because there was a risk of it being lost, and at this moment it's in the Archaeological and Paleontological Museum of Agualinda.
The experts say the discovery would help them with complementing information about extinct animals and ancient settlements. They say the finding of the tusk in the site would increase its potential contribution to scientific researchers. The discovery of mega faunal fossils in South America has been common over the past decades. In 2019, more than 800 mammoth bones were discovered near Mexico.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
group of Cambodian students has designed a manned drone in an attempt to beat traffic. The drone has 8 propellers and a school chair for the pilot's seat. It can carry a human weighing up to 60 kilograms. The creative students say the drone is still in its early stages of development and testing. Equipped with 4 batteries, the human carrier drone can fly up to 4 meters and around 10 minutes above the ground.
Here we have big problems related to traffic jams, so we did some research about this before building the drone. We came up with this drone project as we had the idea that we wanted to solve some problems for our society by making a drone taxi, as well as investing drones for firefighters to help put out fires.
The prototype can or has cost around $20,000 to build. The designers say they need 2 more years to complete the project. The school has expressed hope that the drone could be used in everyday life.
Iran's capital, Tehran, has hosted an art show themed with Aspiration for Peace. Organized by the Economic Cooperation Organization, the event seeks to shed light on the beauty of a global peace through the language of art. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Each one of these delicate works of art are created by an artist from a different country, each trying a unique way to highlight the need for lasting peace in the world. Dubbed Aspiration for Peace, the art gallery is organized by Echo Cultural Institute with the aim of promoting global peace through the language of art.
By holding this event, we want to send a message of peace to all countries. We invited diplomats from all embassies here to gather and unite and celebrate a peaceful gathering. Also, the artworks showcased here are created by artists from various countries, and this represents how beautiful it is for nations to live peacefully.
Art helps connect different civilizations and nations. It helps us bridge the cultural gaps and find commonalities. This will establish mutual understanding and harmony among nations, and therefore conflicts can be avoided.
In some of the artworks, images immediately communicate with the audience, even if faces are veiled. These pictures try to narrate the story of Afghan women and an uncertain future that they're facing amid the Taliban's takeover of power in Afghanistan.
The events that are taking place in my country, Afghanistan, are so painful. It might take hours to tell you how hard it is for an Afghan girl to live in insecurity and uncertainty. But through the language of art, you can understand all these words without the need for translation.
The art show was held on the occasion of the International Day of Peace. Observed every year on September 21st, the occasion was introduced by the UN General Assembly as a chance to strengthen the ideals of peace through observing 24 hours of nonviolence and ceasefire.
A picture is worth 1,000 words, and indeed, no words can be as strong as the strokes of an artist in speaking the beauty of peace. And this is how the universal language of art transcends the political and cultural boundaries and touches the hearts of viewers, no matter what language they speak. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
French slackliner has wowed watching crowds in Paris by crossing from the Eiffel Tower to the other side of the River Seine. Nathan Poulain walked across a rope suspended 17 meters above the ground. He finished the 600-meter course in half an hour. On one point, he sat and lay on the rope before arriving at his destination, the Chaillot Theater. The 27-year-old daredevil practiced 4 years to perform this show. Poulain said that he was staying focused during the walk, and that was very challenging.
When I was young, I had fear of heights, and I learned to contain it. During the performance, I really didn't feel it. I really didn't have that problem. I felt some stress over starting it, but no vertigo, no.
Poulain said that it was an uneasy experience, but he was happy to share it with the public. The athlete started slacklining 10 years ago. In 2019, he performed a 510-meter-long walk between 2 skyscrapers in Paris.
visitors and keepers of a zoo in the Peruvian capital, Lima, are thrilled over the birth of 8 baby penguins from the vulnerable Humboldt species. Zookeepers say the chicks were hatched in July and they're expecting 6 more additions later in October. Currently, the newborns spend their days resting in their nests and being fed by their parents. The Huachipa Zoo currently has 42 Humboldt penguins and is working on recovering the species population.
We have 8 2-month-old chicks and 6 eggs. In 42 days, those eggs will hatch and the chicks will come out. The important thing about Humboldt penguins is that we are recovering their population because they are in a vulnerable state. We are increasing their populations with the breeding we are doing in the zoo.
Researchers say a maximum of less than 10,000 Humboldt penguins are left in the wild, with their population size undergoing extreme fluctuations. The species face emerging threats from agricultural activities to their own vulnerability to predators. The Humboldt penguins are only found along the Pacific coast of Chile and Peru and are enlisted as threatened species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
A passionate Indian teacher has turned a road into a classroom and houses walls into blackboards to make up for the prolonged school shutdown caused by COVID-19. Deep Narayan Nayak is working with nearly 60 students in a small tribal village in the eastern state of West Bengal. He started to teach students, most of whom are first-generation learners, last year, when all local schools closed under lockdown restrictions. Nayak says that he was worried about his students' education since many of them did not have access to smartphones or internet connection. But thanks to his initiative, his students can learn everything from popular nursery rhymes to the importance of masks.
We are teaching children everything, how to maintain social distancing, how to wear a mask, what is the importance of masks and hand washing. The children came forward and participated in this initiative, and they are also educating others.
The parents and villagers are grateful to Nayak, saying that they are happy their children are no longer wasting their time loitering around in the village. Nayak is now popularly known as the teacher of the street among the villagers.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. This program, Islamic Laws, we are going to talk about the Islamic laws related to purity according to Ayatollah Sistani. But before that, Let's take a listen to a short biography.
The Grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of five, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hausa lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzuma Sabzawari and Sharh Ishraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazvini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in Fiqh and Usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Sheikh Javid, you know, in some houses, the floors are carpeted. And the way, especially in some of the Western houses, you see, the floors are covered with carpet and glued to the floor in such a way that it's pretty difficult to lift it off or remove it. Okay?
Yeah.
How can such carpets be rendered ritually pure or tahir if it becomes impure with urine or blood? Would you explain about it, please? Yes.
The problem is that there's some carpets, as you rightly mentioned, is glued to the floor, and it's sometimes very difficult to remove it or lift it off. Ayatollah Sistani says that if you pour a little water on the najis area or the najis part of the carpet,
mm-hmm.
and then collect the water using, let's say, a piece of a sponge or a towel to get back the water and squeeze it, okay?
Yes, somewhere else.
Somewhere else. The carpet becomes pure, okay? Because in the event that the carpet cannot be removed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But okay, if it can be removed, you can just take it out and wash it. You should wash it.
Yes. Sure.
But in certain cases where it's impossible or difficult to remove the carpet, the only solution is to pour a little water, even a cup of water, or a half full, let's say, a liter of water, whatever, on the najis area, and then make sure to collect all the water with something.
Mm-hmm.
And then that carpet becomes pure. And of course, it's not necessary to use cool water to make it pure.
Yes.
To just pour a cup of water or, let's say, a jug full of water.
Yes.
Is
this Qalil water or Kathir water that will be able to purify that part?
According to Ayatollah Sistani, Qalil water is sufficient.
Uh-huh.
Qalil means a little quantity of water. So a glass of water or a jug full of water. This is all Qalil water.
I've heard two cups, right?
Two cups. Yeah, depending on how the size, okay,
uh-huh.
of the najasa, maybe if a large area of the carpet has been made impure, then you need a larger amount of water
so
to purify it.
Yes. So what is kathir water in relation to qalil water?
Kathir water is cool water. Yes. It's
uh-huh.
We have qalil water and kathir water.
Right.
And then kathir water is divided into cool water and running water. rainwater. And these are the, you see, these are kathir water. Kathir means abundant, okay?
I see.
And qalil means little.
A very quick question, which is quite relevant to this previous question.
Yes.
Is that, you know, imagine that somebody has seen an impurity somewhere in those glued carpet,
mm-hmm.
all right, which has been glued to the floor in the house. And it is not even possible, like, you don't have any access to water.
Yeah.
And it is time for prayer, and you run the risk of, in fact, losing the time for doing or performing your prayer. Is it possible to cover it with another clean or ritually pure cloth and then say the prayer over there?
Why not? Of course. Definitely, you can do it.
Even if the carpet is impure, yeah, underneath.
Yeah, of course. Of course. That's the reason why we use a rug, a small rug for prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's necessary.
The praying mat.
The praying mat, yes. You call it praying mat. Very good. You use it to make sure that you the place where you do your sajda is pure. Okay.
Uh-huh.
It's not necessary that the place where you stand should be pure,
mm-hmm.
and as long as it's dry, okay?
I see.
But the place where you do sajda, it could be, let's say, one span or two spans wide, okay?
Yes.
That place has to be clean,
mm-hmm.
has to be clean. You should make sure that it is clean. And of course, if you don't know that whether it is clean or unclean, whether it's pure or impure,
yes.
then you don't have to do anything. That place should be treated as pure. But if you know that the najasa has actually spread all over the place,
yes.
okay, and there's no place where you can perform your prayers, you can spread a piece of a prayer mat or something which is pure and pray on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is important is the place where you put your turba and place your hands on should be pure.
Okay, let's take a break and we'll be back talking more about laws related to purity according to Ayatollah Sistani. Stay with us.
The office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. We are talking about purity-related laws according to Ayatollah Sistani. And the question that I would like to ask you, Sheikh Javed, this time, in this part of the program, Islamic Laws, is if a dog licks somebody's body or a part of somebody's clothes, how should one go about purifying it?
Well, that's a good question. Many people out there think that, okay, we have to wash our clothes when after it's licked by a dog.
Yes.
7 times, and even rub it against the wall or use sand to purify it.
Yes.
That's not correct. Okay, Ayatollah Sistani says if you wash your clothes or your body once with the cool water, or twice with little water, then that cloth becomes pure,
mm-hmm.
and you don't need to do anything. Okay, and the cloth you can wear it. You can wear it during prayers.
So, is washing the dirty dishes, for example, which has been licked or have been licked by dogs, for example,
mm-hmm.
with sand or soil, is that a myth?
It's not a myth. You know, there are different kinds of let's say
purifying.
The cooking pots, utensils, and things like that. Okay.
Yes.
If there is, let's say, a cauldron with a narrow mouth,
mm-hmm.
and let's say the water, the dog's saliva
mm-hmm.
has fallen into that cauldron, and you cannot wash it using your hands to rub it, yes?
Yes.
Then you need to pour a little sand into it and shake it firmly, and then throw it out, you see?
Okay.
Yeah, and then wash it. Ayatollah Sistani says it's better to wash it, let's say, 7 times. Okay, 7 is better.
With the water.
With water.
Pour
after
water.
It has been, let's say,
cleaned with the sand.
With the sand or small pebbles.
Yes.
And that's what most religious authorities say. This is about cauldrons, about cooking pots with a narrow mouth. Okay,
mm-hmm.
but as for plates are concerned, as for dishes or other dishes are concerned,
you're not talking about clothes, you mean?
Yeah.
Or cloth.
Yeah, we are talking about clothes.
Yes.
They are. We don't need to wash them 7 times. If you wash them, especially in today's time, we have detergents, and of course those detergents remove
everything. Yeah.
Everything. You see, you first wash it, then you use detergents, and then you wash it. You wash the dishes for a third time or for a fourth time. Then there's no doubt that those dishes become pure according to all religious authorities, let alone Ayatollah Sistani.
Yes. And another question would be, which is prevalent, of course, among many people, is it permissible to keep a cat or a dog?
Well, unfortunately, in modern time, we see that people are very much eager to keep dogs in their houses and keep cats. Of course, dogs are, according to the teachings of the religion, are essentially impure,
mm-hmm.
and you can
like
keep
pigs.
Yeah, like pigs, of course, and you can keep dogs for a reasonable purpose, like for example,
farming.
Yeah, for farming, or you have a big campus, a house yard, and of course you're afraid of someone attacking your house,
yes.
or stealing. Then you can keep a dog to protect your house and the
guard dog,
the property.
Yes.
Okay, the property that's called guard dog. But to take a dog inside into your TV
lounge,
living
yes.
room, everywhere, and it might leak all around the walk all around the house.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the Sharia does not let's say allow it,
mm-hmm.
Because it may make things impure.
I see.
And therefore, to make sure that no part of your house is made impure, you should keep. If you want to keep a dog, even if it's not for that purpose, for guarding the property, you should keep it outside your house.
I see.
Yeah. When it comes to cats, of course, cats.
Let me stop you there and promise our listeners and fans of the radio to keep listening to us and stay with us for these questions, inshallah, in the upcoming episodes. Thank you very much, Sheikh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو رحيم محيي المميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Shuma dar in qarn mojza kardid. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. In the name of Allah, the exalted, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience and welcome to our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This program is dedicated to the memory of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul. In the previous programs, we discussed some historical background and details regarding this great personality. But today we are going to speak about who this personality is really all about, and we're going to do it through the viewpoints and opinions of some great scholars here in Iran, and of course through the Supreme Leader as well. I'm your host for this program, Ijaz Hussain, and I have the honor and pleasure of my good friend, Dr. Mahdi Turabi, who is going to help me go through this discussion about this very great personality who really did change the world. First, I'd like to say salam to my good friend and welcome him to the program.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Turabi. Dr. Turabi, can you take us through some of the opinions of especially the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Khamenei? Exactly, you know, in terms of this, you know, elite scholarship, that what did they make? And we know that, of course, Sayyid Khamenei was the student of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul. What is his take on him, you know, after so many years, after so many decades, about what he felt was his great teacher was all about?
Right. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, you know, it's interesting over the years that the Supreme Leader has often mentions Imam.
Sure.
And, you know, speaks about him. And of course, we have to remember that the Supreme Leader has very close and intimate knowledge of Imam.
Yes,
in terms of, you know, both the events that occurred politically the decisions that had to be made, but also on a spiritual level in terms of, you know, having that student-teacher relationship.
Relationship,
that they
had. Yes.
So his opinions, his analysis, his views on Imam are very, you know, expert opinions.
They are
from a person who is
very close to the Imam.
Right. Was very close to the Imam and understands the things that happened and is able to put them in the proper context.
Just for the sake of memory, you know, for the sake of our audience, we have to remind also that the Supreme Leader was also the president of Iran during that particular time. And he also went to the UN and gave a very important speech at
that
time.
Of course, you know, before the revolution, he was one of the leading, you know, one of the leaders of the revolution.
He was,
especially in Mashhad and in the east of the country.
That's right. And he also participated at the war fronts as well.
Right. You know, he knew Imam from before the revolution in terms of the, you know, relationship that they had. And also then after the revolution, he was, you know, very close with Imam in terms of just the activities that they had for governing the country and conducting the war at that time. So the things he says about Imam have credibility.
They do because he's lived that period.
They're not just the things. They're firsthand.
Yeah, firsthand. Exactly. Absolutely. So yeah, what we see as a firsthand account. Absolutely.
Right. So yes. And again, like I said, there are many things over the years that he has said. So it's if we want, that itself is a book. the things, explanations of Imam by the Supreme Leader, that itself could be a book.
Yes, it can be. Yes.
Absolutely. So I just want to pick out two things. One, please, which is, older, some things that he said, around the time of, a few years after, sure, after or around the time of Imam, at the death of Imam. I think the first thing that he said really captures the essence of what Imam was. And I'm not quoting directly, I'm paraphrasing for translation.
Of course, for the sake of translation.
And basically what the Supreme Leader at that time said is that Imam, as a person, as a personality, as a historical figure, as a religious leader, was so big and significant that he can only be compared to the prophets and those that were the followers of the prophets in terms of the awliya, the imams, that he's that level of a personality.
My God.
Okay? Yeah. So it's not simply a matter of being a historical leader, which he was, of being a political leader, of being a person who, transformed a nation after more than 2000.
But it's something much more substantial than this.
Which transformed a nation after 2000, more than 2,500 years of monarchy to a republic, to an Islamic republic.
Yeah.
He was also extremely significant as a religious and as a spiritual person.
And that is the key.
In the history of humanity. Yeah.
In the history of humanity.
You have these people that come along in the spiritual history of humanity, and they change the world. They are the ones that lead a spiritual awakening, a spiritual reawakening. And, again, if we want to look at history, if we have the prophets whose job is to do that, and then you have people, I'll just give an example. A person comes along like Martin Luther in Christianity.
That's what I was about to say. Yes,
I'm not trying to say that, pointing out a person in the history of Christianity who had a major, major impact.
Quite.
Spiritually.
Especially on the civil rights movement in America.
I'm talking about Martin Luther, the of the Protestant Reformation.
Oh, I beg your pardon, you're going back 15 centuries.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
About that.
I'm talking about a person like Calvin.
Calvin, right.
Or somebody like, in Scotland, John Knox, right?
Thank you for putting me in the right time frame. Right?
And I'm
thank
saying
you.
Imam is more like, actually, if you want to think of it in Christian history,
sure,
you have a person like Martin Luther who comes and completely,
changes
a lot of things.
Yeah.
Now, I'm using this example to make clear that what we're talking about is a spiritual revolution.
Right.
Okay? And
Imam Khomeini is, may God bless his soul, is seen in the light of that kind of reformation
in
Islam.
Imam is somebody who basically, if we want to put it very, directly, he basically revived Islam.
Exactly.
Okay?
Sure.
He revived that lack of spirituality in a world at that time,
sure,
in the late 20th century,
that's
where
right,
basically, Christianity was no longer really relevant.
Correct.
Where the ideology of most elites, both in the East and in the West, was either atheism or a kind of religion which was very, indirectly, a Christianity which really didn't have much to say in terms of, their conduct.
That's right. It was a very sort of personal type of
thing.
Right,
it was a personal thing, and basically religion was out.
Right.
From the thoughts of elites. Again,
sure.
I'm saying elites here,
yes,
so people don't misunderstand. I'm not saying everybody was.
No, we're not talking about the political elites.
Right.
Yes.
We're talking about the elites in the world.
Yes.
You either were a communist and Marxist,
sure,
and allied with the East in,
yes,
some shape
sure
or form,
sure,
or you were a capitalist, whatever, either liberal or nationalist,
sure,
and allied with the U.S. at some form. And this is on the political side, but all these political things have a spiritual backing. They have an
true
ideological backing.
True, true.
So obviously, in Marxism and in that kind of view, you have they're atheists. They
that's right. I mean, basically, what you're saying is that we've got a background here in the late 20th century, where, as you quite rightly say, we have ideologies and isms which are basically anti-God.
Right. And here comes a man.
Hmm.
who, you know, says no. He's theocentric.
He's theocentric.
His whole thing is that God is what matters, and mm-hmm. God, as revealed in the Quran, in the school of Ahlul Bayt,
in the scriptures, yes,
in the school of Ahlul Bayt, yeah. as taught by Imam Ali alayhi salam,
sure.
after the Prophet peace be upon him, and so this is a. And it's not just some guy, you know, doing a speech somewhere in some corner of the world that nobody listens to. Okay? It's a man who's then also implements this.
He lives it.
He lives it. Mm. He has an effect on the people that of his own nation and completely True. Transforms them. Mm. You know, we have many cases. This is not something that, you know, anybody who's been to Iran or who has spoken to Iranians who lived at that time. Many people who were not religious became very religious
exactly.
because of Imam.
Yes, you're looking at one now.
So these are things that, you know, in his own country and in the surrounding areas, this is something that, you know, he had a direct impact on the lives, individual lives of people, in them in terms of them becoming
Absolutely.
Religious.
Absolutely, I mean, there was a huge transformation.
This is what prophets do.
This is what prophets
This is what the imams do.
I like
okay.
That. Yes,
now exactly. there's this big thing they always say. Well, why do you call him imam? You know, especially amongst some
yeah,
of the
that's true.
You know,
yes,
why do you call him imam? Well, right. you know,
that's
first of all,
question.
Imam is mentioned in the Quran many times.
Of course,
and
it is.
Has it means leader. It means
a guide.
Guide leader. It also is used for the leaders of the kufar.
Of course, it
is. Aimatul kufr. So it's a general term.
Term.
Okay. Yes. Now you know why do we say imam? We say imam because he led people. He was
exactly.
he was the spiritual leader.
Leader. And he also, in a sense, as you quite rightly say, you know, because the use of the word imam in the sort of etymology of, and the sort of practical aspect of where this word was being used, you know, Imam Khomeini, you know, added a whole new dimension to the word imam. He made us understand that there is something much more to being an imam than just simply somebody who just, you know, leads the prayer in the mosque.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, and again, you mean you were there, you experienced
yes,
it, you saw
I did.
It.
In Scotland, we had, we certainly had our blood curdling day in and day out because we, no, actually, we were in a lot of, what do you call it, expectation, you know, we were kind of like.
Well, what I want to say is yeah. that I think for a lot of us, you know, the concepts of a prophet, of an imam, these were things that it was hard for us to imagine as a practical thing.
As a practical thing, yes.
You know,
as a living practical
thing.
We
believe
thing,
in
yeah.
it. We say yes. There, and then, but to actually have a outside example of it, because we are so many centuries have passed
That's
since
right.
that time, it's very difficult, you know.
To envisage such
right.
a thing.
And then
yeah.
somebody like Imam comes, and then you say, yeah, I can understand.
I can understand. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I can understand.
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
This is the impact that he had on people, that, you know, there's some people are you know, moved towards thinking about themselves and God and reality on a purely logical level. And this is a very good thing. I'm not...
No.
This yeah. is actually one of the best ways.
Best ways, yes.
It is the best way to understand because it's a firm way.
Hmm.
And yet, majority of people, they need to see something.
That's true.
You know what I mean? They
Absolutely.
They need to experience it.
They need to experience it.
In addition to that logical argument, which is excellent, and this is a good way of doing it. This is the way that, you know, real humans understand things. They're not that emotional. But the majority of people need to see something. So when we say, for example, that, you know, the Prophet, peace be upon him, had an impact, it's because of himself.
Exactly.
This is why what he was created for.
Exactly.
God put him there so that the Prophet himself would be the proof.
The
of
proof.
God's existence. And with the interaction that you have with the Prophet, that you would believe that there's a
yes,
God.
Yes, absolutely.
Or as we say, the same with the Imam.